Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 13th, 2012, episode 423. Good morning, horse people.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here at Horses in the Morning. Jamie, I got to tell you, I'm a little sad about the whole, all the races being done, the Triple Crown's over, and I'm really kind of sad about that. But what I'm most sad about is I won't be able to play Pegasus for one freaking year. I got a whole year.
Oh, I'm so sad about that, too. That just breaks my heart. Just breaks my heart.
There are certain things I look forward to, and that's one of them. Tormenting you for an entire month and a half.
We've got a lot of good summer races, Glenn, and the Breeders' Cup is only, like, 6 short months away.
Yeah, but none of them has a half man, half horse.
Thank God.
With a crappy song.
Thank God. Jeez, ridiculous.
I'm going to miss it. I really am. I'm going to miss it. We have a racing story later today that has nothing to do with racing, really, and everything to do with laundering money. We'll talk about that later today. I'll tell you what else we're going to talk about later today is I have never, ever in my life seen horse sports in the mainstream news as much as it has been the last week. And we'll talk about all of that coming up. It's just been unbelievable. We're getting some press now. Not all of it great, but it's press.
I think it's great. It can't be bad. Can't be bad right now. No, horse sports have definitely, in the past week, with the royal family and then with, our maybe potential president's wife being a dressage rider to all of the Triple Crown races that were going on. So it should be good. And I've got a story for you, Glenn, and it's full of intrigue and drama and backstabbing, and it's all surrounding Secretariat. Ooh, it's going to be good. Yeah.
Hasn't Secretariat been gone for a while?
Yep, he has. And this is going to resurface. This is going to potentially change history if this happens. Are you intrigued?
Okay. I'm intrigued. I haven't heard this yet.
That's a tease right there, my friend.
Are you making it up, or is it really a story?
No.
Oh. Okay.
No, it's a big story. It's huge. I'll tell you later coming up, but we'll find out from Jennifer what is on today's show first.
On today's List, crappy Wednesday edition, flying changes our front page news today as we listen to an interview that Jamie did while she was over there in España, all about flying lead changes, and it's Horse Health Day. So I hope you all ate a good breakfast. And happy birthday to somebody.
Somebody?
I couldn't find any famous people born today.
Well, we do know it's somebody's birthday today. That we do know.
Great.
I'm looking here. If there's anybody on my Facebook whose birthday is today. Nope. I don't have any birthdays either. You have any birthdays, Jamie? I've got any birthdays. I'm fresh out of birthdays.
There's a guy that I went to high school with. It's his birthday today, according to my Facebook. So happy birthday, Marshall.
High school guy. Did you date him?
No, never dated him. Thank you very much. He was one of my brother's friends. So that means he would have died.
All right, here we go. Daily Winnie time. I have a special Daily Winnie today, and it goes out to a friend of the show. She's been on several times, and she is a Paralympic rider by the name of Rebecca Hart. Right now, going on in Gladstone, New Jersey, is the Paralympic Selection Trials and the Para-Equestrian Dressage National Championships. Well, they got a little wet yesterday, but that didn't stop Rebecca Hart from inching ahead of Donna Panessa from New York. And right now, Rebecca leads the competition with only the freestyle to go. And after freestyle, they will decide who will get the 4 spots on the United States Paralympic team headed to London. So it looks like Rebecca's in a good spot for that. Right now, currently leading, we have Rebecca Hart, Donna Panessa, Jonathan Wentz, and Dale Dedrick. So it's a competition. There's still others that could pop in there today after the freestyle, but it's looking pretty good for Rebecca. So go, Rebecca. Oops, did we lose Jamie?
No, I'm right here. I'm waiting for you to hit the button.
Okay.
Did you forget how this works, Glenn? You do yours and then I do mine. Well, I have two Daily Winnies. My first one is going to go to poor Boomer. Poor Boomer. My husband's dear sweet angel dog, whatever. Lie, he is a demon, okay? He is a demon. He's crazy. We have our property has a fence line that stretches across the road, and it's a dog fence. But anytime somebody jogs by or rides a bicycle by or drives a big truck by or happens to do anything next to our house, he sprints to the fence, hits it, and starts barking and runs up and down the fence line. That's what he does. I've tried to stop him. With their little collar to everything, can't get him to stop. Well, I think maybe yesterday he might have learned his lesson.
Uh-oh.
Along that side of the fence is we have just it is so tiny, and it's an electric fence. Just I wanted to extend my pasture, and instead of spending $3,000 on extending the fencing, I just put a little electric fence up. Well, usually the horses are out at night, so during the day the fence is not there. Well, I usually leave it hooked, but I had unhooked it and draped the long electric part kind of down on the ground, and it sits there and it's no big deal. Well, Boomer.
Oh, no.
While somebody is about to come jogging down the street, some innocent poor person, like it was a woman pushing a baby stroller. Okay.
No.
Seriously, not a threat, Boomer. She's jogging slowly down the street, pushing the baby stroller, and Boomer hits the deck, takes off, goes running to the fence, and at some point wraps his foot in his scurry to the fence, wraps his foot around the hanging down portion of the little electric wire. Now, it's not a big, thick wire. It was not cutting his foot, but it was wrapped around his foot and shocking him. That dog screamed bloody murder for, I don't know, the entire time I was trying to get it from underneath his foot, wrapped around him, and is screaming. Screaming so much that the people that live 2 houses down, which is 4 acres away, came to our house to see if our dog had been hit by a car. They were like, oh, my God, is everything okay? Like, oh, yeah. Boomer wrapped his leg in the electric fence and starts screaming, bloody murder. And here I am. Some woman with a baby stroller is walking by. I've got 2 students out there. I just spent a week in Spain riding Andalusians, perfect horses, perfect standing out there. And I'm like, what is my life at home? I've got a yelling dog, babies crying. It was just a total disaster. I was holding on to Jet at the time. I had to let him go. He starts running around. I'm trying to get the dang dog. While I'm trying to get the dog's foot unwrapped, what does Zenyatta, his sister, do? Attacks him, bit me in the hand. I'm like, what is wrong with my life? What is wrong with my life? I want to go back to Spain.
I hope somebody was taking a video of this.
Well, Chad was out there and Jose was out there and they were working on a project out there. And it was just like watching me have this whole episode happen and everybody's just staring at me.
They were probably in disbelief. You know how when those things happen, you're looking at somebody and you can't believe it's happening. And you just stand there and look because you just can't believe it's happening. It's one
yeah.
of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they could have at least grabbed Jet as he's trotting down the driveway. Seriously.
So were you getting shocked the whole time you were trying to get poor Boomer up out of the electric fence?
Yes, and the problem was Zenyatta jumped on top of him, like, kill the weak, you know. He's hurting. What does she do instead of being supportive and licking his wound? She's biting him and bit me in the top of the hand while she's biting him while he's screaming bloody murder and his baby's crying, running by. The horse is loose. The whole thing was just a total disaster. Just a total disaster.
I think
disaster.
We need to call that guy from Texas to come out. What's his name, the dog whisperer dude?
Well, in California, it's Caesar Milan. And yes,
that's
he needs
who I
to come
yeah,
to my house.
Caesar. Oh, is he from California? Yeah, I never watched him. But he needs to come out to your house.
Yeah. Yeah, we need help. Yeah. We need help. And yeah. I think he would make the drive to Phoenix if he sees a video of Boomer. He's insane. Boomer is insane. On a happy note, I did just teach Boomer to fetch into the pool. So I throw the ball into the pool, and he jumps in and swims. Now I found a new way to wear him out in the summer heat. Because
there you
he's got to be tired.
Yeah. And you don't kill him that way, so that's good.
Yeah.
Either that or just hook him to the electric fence, apparently, too. That works.
You know, I'm going to see if he's going to charge that fence again today. Maybe he learned. Maybe it's like, oh, don't do that.
He might back off if he put two and two together. It's like the ultimate shock.
Oh, what a moron. Okay, next Daily Winnie. Enough about stupid dogs. Now, I hope you have the song ready because this is really exciting. My next Daily Winnie goes to the Finnish artist Mari Kazernin. Mari Kazernin is a genius. What she has decided to do is turn My Little Ponies into famous movie characters and pop culture icons. She has transformed My Little Ponies, and I'm going to post a link here on our Facebook page in a second. She has turned them in. There's
okay, first
a photo.
Stop right there. Until this morning when you brought this up, I had no idea what a My Little Pony was. But I can tell you that they're in the news a lot. There are more news stories written about My Little Ponies than almost any other damn little toy in the world. What is it with the My Little Ponies?
Glenn, I cannot believe you did not know what a My Little Pony is. Jennifer,
no idea.
Jennifer, please tell me that you had My Little Ponies as a kid.
I have never owned a My Little Pony, ever.
You're
now, I had lots of ponies.
Mean.
Ever a My Little Pony.
Your parents were cruel. What little girl does not have My Little Ponies? Okay, we have to post this on Facebook right now. How many of you had My Little Ponies growing up? Jennifer, maybe you can do this, and we'll see how many of our horse people had My Little Ponies. And
I think you're the only one.
Like four. No, I'm not.
I'm not going to put the growing up part because some of our listeners might still have My Little Ponies.
Exactly. Like Briars, okay? Like, I've got six Briars on my desk right now, okay? So,
I understand
but I did
the Briar thing, but this My Little Pony thing, I don't quite get it. And then you made me listen to this, and it made me understand why I have no clue what a My Little Pony is after I heard it.
Well, I like to say, My Little Pony, My Little Pony. Everywhere you go.
This sounds way, way too much like It's a Small World at Disney World, and I just want to shoot myself when I go through that. All right, that's pretty fantastic.
My Little Pony, My Little Pony. So they were dolls, and then they made cartoons out of them because they were so popular. And this woman, this Finnish artist, has now started designing My Little Ponies. She has My Little Ponies that is dressed as Darth Vader. She has a My Little Pony that is Princess Leia in the sexy costume. She has Batman and Robin. She has Jack Sparrow from the Pirates of the Caribbean. So I'm going to post this on Facebook, and then maybe we can ask the question, who had My Little Ponies? Because, my God, how could you not have My Little Ponies if you're a horse girl?
Apparently there are some that did not. Jennifer being one of them. Maybe you're the only one. Maybe you'll be surprised how many horse girls didn't have My Little Ponies. You might be surprised.
This is ridiculous. All right, I'll post it in a second. I'll put the link up, and then I'll ask if anybody's had it, because I just can't believe nobody would have had My Little Ponies. Seriously. So there you go. That's all I have. That's my second daily winning. By the way, these My Little Ponies that she has started making and changing have literally started selling for $400 a piece. She's had three exhibits. She's got another exhibit going on right now in Helsinki, Finland. Okay? Exhibits for her My Little Ponies. That's awesome.
Well, Glenn Forrester in the chat room, by the way, the chat room is open. You can find it at blogtalkradio.com. Just look for Horses in the Morning. Click on that, and you'll find the chat room. But Glenn Forrester says, I think anyone over 40 would be too old to have had My Little Ponies. See? In my defense and Jennifer's defense, we were too old to have My Little Ponies. So there.
You know, you don't have to be six to have My Little Ponies. You can have them when you're 15. You can have them when you're 25. Hell, I'd like one now.
I want the Batman one. All right, well, we talked about earlier in the show about how much horse sport is in the news right now. Between Zara Phillips over there in England, there must have been 100 more articles today written. If you go to Google and just, you know, search her name and look in the last 24 hours, it's amazing. And then we had the Triple Crown, so that's hit the news. We have another story we're going to talk about a little bit later that's hit the news today. But then Ann Romney and her horse. Ann Romney and dressage. Dressage had nobody even knew in the mainstream world what dressage was until Ann Romney came along. I have here from the last week, I pulled up Romney dressage on Google. And over the last week, there's been stories on ABC, NBC, Politico, CBS, the New York Magazine, Goldberg, Bloomberg, and the list just goes on and on. Some of the titles: Ann Romney's horse comes in third in Olympic qualifying event. Ann Romney's horse, Olympic bound. Ann Romney visits Ocala, rides at a stable. Ann Romney on horseback explains therapeutic riding. On horseback, Ann Romney talks about health struggle. One of Ann Romney's fancy horses might become even fancier. I don't know exactly how that happens. I guess when you go to the Olympics, it gets fancier. So, and it just goes on and on. All these articles written about Ann Romney and dressage. Well, Stephen Colbert on the Colbert Report took his own take on Ann Romney and her dressage and how that plays into the political landscape today. And he even wrote a song, and we couldn't help resist but play this. Just enjoy it for what it is. Colbert is Colbert. So if you're a dressage fan, just sit back, relax, and let it go right off the top, because he picks on everybody. So you want to hear it? Have you heard this yet, Jamie?
No, I haven't heard it. I'm excited.
All right, here we go.
Welcome to The Report. Thank you for joining us, Nation. We all see the news. Last week's jobs report was miserable. The economy is not getting any better. Our relationship with nuclear Pakistan has never been more tense, and Europe is on the verge of collapse. And you know what that means. Things are looking up for Mitt Romney. And folks, the old Romney luck continues.
The Romneys might be going to the Olympics. A horse Ann Romney co-owns came in third in an Olympic qualifying event.
The Romney's horse might go to the Olympics. Though one would imagine it's going to be a long drive to London on top of their station wagon. Now... their horse, Rafalka, is competing at the United States Equestrian Federation National Dressage Championships in Gladstone, New Jersey, as if you don't know from your equestrian fantasy league. Folks, this is exactly what Mitt needs. He's had a little trouble relating to Joe's six-pack. I mean, just listen to him talking about basketball.
I met a guy yesterday, 7 feet tall. I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Yes. The tall man was not in sport. Neither bounce ball nor oblong leather zeppelin toss. But folks, the image of Romney as a privileged princeling ends today. Because now Mitt is just your average blue-collar fan of dressage. Of course, that word may sound highfalutin, but don't worry. It also goes by the street name Horse Ballet. Jim, show us Rafalka at sport.
And they're showing a test here of Rafalka in New Jersey. Freestyle.
Is it awesome? Is it a nice horse?
You couldn't tell they cut apart so much of it.
Rafalka number one! Rafalka number one! Woo! Go Rafalka! And folks, perfect hair. And folks, lest you think the horse is doing all the work, Mitt picks the music himself. At this year's World Cup, he chose a selection of songs from the soundtrack to Rain Man. Clearly, Mitt envies Rain Man's ability to connect with people. Folks, in support of Mitt Romney, I am making dressage the official Colbert Report sport of the summer. So, kids... So, kids, run out and get yourself a $100,000 Hanoverian and start tee-offing to the soundtrack from Cocktail. I just get swept up. So, Nation, sing it with me, the official seventh inning anthem of dressage. Take me out to the horse ring. Take me out to dressage. Buy me some jodhpurs and a velvet hat. I don't care if the orchestra's flat. Let me softly clap for the home horse. If he don't win, he'll be glue. For it's one, two, but Voltaes, you're out at the United States Equestrian Federation National Dressage Champions in Gladstone, New Jersey. Play sports!
Are you kidding me? Now, this is opening up an entire... can of worms for the dressage community. Oh my God. He's going to be like showing up at dressage shows. And how funny is it going to be when they're like, shh, be quiet.
I know.
Not loud, talk loud. He's going
to
be
there
trying to do
the There was more to
wave.
That, actually. You've got to go listen to there was another 2-3 minutes of it. But he does then declare dressage as the official Colbert sport of the Olympics. So,
oh no.
I
oh no.
A lot more dressage coming on the Colbert report.
Wow. And, you know, it couldn't happen to a better community of people. I'm so excited. I love dressage. I love the art. I mean, I've been riding dressage the past 2 weeks in Spain. You know, the whole art of dressage and the whole connection with the horse and the fact that when you go to a dressage show, everybody's so quiet and respectful. And to see Stephen Colbert try to go to a dressage show would be awesome. I mean, awesome.
With his audience, who's always very loud and vocal. Yeah.
That's awesome. Good find. I love it. See, I don't see the Colbert Report till the next day because it comes on so early here on the West Coast. So I just watch the reruns on Comedy Central the next day. Awesome. I am going to watch it today. Make sure I'm in front of the TV.
We had some other news for you. One of the ones we were talking about was the quarter horse world, the quarter horse race world being upended yesterday as the FBI did a bunch of raids on some farms. Apparently, what's been happening over the last 8 months is that the drug cartels from Mexico have found a new way to launder money, and that way has been in quarter horse racing in the United States. So they bought a bunch of farms, they set up some of their relatives, and they started buying expensive horses. Well, what what tipped off the quarter horse racing people was the amount of money they were paying for these horses. They would pay 2-3 times what they were worth, and in an effort just to launder money. Now, if you want me to explain laundering money, I couldn't do it if my life depended on it. So let's just say they were buying horses, racing horses, and then what they were doing is they created all these shell corporations, and then they would sell the horses to their own corporations for much more money and keep doing that over and over again, and that allowed them to bring all of this drug money into the United States and quasi make it legal. So, but the problem was they started winning, and there would be all of these people who were related to these nasty drug cartel people. I mean, the really bad one, the Zetas. We're talking the Zetas drug operation out of Mexico, the ones who butcher and torture and do all of that. Their relatives started showing up in the winner's circle, which got some people's attention. And then the FBI got involved, and they've been doing an 8-month investigation of this, and they finally raided a bunch of farms yesterday out in the Midwest, and they arrested a whole bunch of people, and they have arrest warrants out for a whole bunch of the leaders of the drug cartel they think are still in Mexico. It's just not the kind of story you would expect in quarter horse racing. But they said that they always find ways, they have to find ways to launder the money, so they'll try and find businesses. They figure, well, if we can find businesses that we can actually make money laundering money, that's even better. So they just thought quarter horse racing would be one to help them do that. So there you go.
Oh, my gosh. And these guys are, you know, it's not like they're just, you know, they're quarter horse fans and they decided, oh, well, maybe we can just turn a little profit and we'll peacefully go about laundering money. Dude, these people are like murdering people and just getting like, I mean, this is as drug cartel, scary, freakishly disgusting, disturbing, bad movie as you could imagine.
Yeah, these are the worst of the worst. The Zetas are the worst of the worst. And they have a lot of money, though, that they have to put somewhere. You know, after you make all that money, you got to have something to do with it, right? Well, looks like quarter horse racing in the United States. They actually had transactions done in California, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. And, you know, quarter horse racing is obviously not as big. We don't cover it that much yet. There's a lot of money in quarter horse racing. They have million-dollar races and everything as well. So there's a lot of money in quarter horse racing. A lot more now that the Mexican drug money has been filtered in, I guess.
Well, and they didn't even really try to hide it. A lot of the names of these horses were, Mr. Piloto, the pilot, won the $1 million prize at Rudoso Downs up in New Mexico at 22-1. So I'm sure they had bet on him considerably. But what were some of the names of some of the horses? They all had the name like Cartel in them. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, Number One Cartel or Coronita Cartel. I mean, they put Cartel in the name. You're right. It's just amazing. They didn't get away with it for very long because apparently they've only been doing it for a year or so, and the FBI has been on it for about 8 months with full cooperation, apparently, of all the quarter horse people and the various racing commissions in the various states were helping out. So they were just waiting the right time to pull the plug on this. And I guess they had to be real careful. These are dangerous people. So
they said that the arrest could potentially result in some form of retaliation and urged U.S. citizens in Mexico to maintain a low profile. Here, to any U.S. citizens in Mexico, what the hell are you doing there in the first place? You need to come on home. That place is scary right now. Don't go to Mexico.
Right. Yeah, they do expect retaliations directly against Americans. So
get
the heck out right now.
Okay, a happier story, sort of, full of drama and intrigue. Are you ready for the Secretariat story?
Yeah, what's going on there?
Okay, do you know who holds the record for the fastest Kentucky Derby? Take a guess.
Wasn't it Secretariat, I thought? No?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Do you know who holds the record for the fastest Belmont?
Oh, we just had this last week, Jennifer. Do you remember?
I'm going to give you one guess. Starts with an S.
Secretariat.
Yes, very good, Glenn. Now,
you don't need much help.
Let me ask you, do you know who holds the record for the fastest Preakness?
Pegasus!
No, and it is not Secretariat. It is not chicken. It was Canyon Arrow 2. That was the horse that is actually currently has the fastest Preakness. And Secretariat, you know, basically holds the two of the three jewels of the Triple Crown track records. However, there's some drama. Penny Chenery has requested, of course, Penny Chenery, the owner of Secretariat, and Thomas Chuckis, the president of the Maryland Jockey Club, are holding a meeting on June 19th at Laurel Park at 1 p.m., and it is open to the public. And what they're going to do, they are going to revisit the timers that held, that were in charge of timing the Preakness in 1973. Apparently, the electronic timer in use at Pimlico for the 1973 Preakness recorded a winning time of 1 minute and 55 seconds. That quickly became a source of controversy after two independent official clockers for the Daily Racing Form had times of 1 minute and 53 and 2/5 of a second. Now, as a result, the official time was then changed to 1 minute and 54 and 2/5. It's like they split
just go in the
middle? Yes! And you know what? Right on, Penny Chenery. Have that revisited, because apparently, you know, they can have video technology and they have all these different ways that they can go back and check the time, because it was officially recorded as 1:53 and 2/5 and 1:55. So it's like they split the difference. And this is the only race that he doesn't have the track record for. So they're going back and they're going to review it. And I really hope that Secretariat comes out on top and has the track record after this June.
Wow. So, yeah, with video, I mean, they had video. So, I mean, it would be pretty easy to go back and do that, I guess. I don't know. Are they allowed to make it official after all this time? I guess the track can do what they want.
Chinnery says, for me, revisiting this dispute on a new day is a matter of resolution for historians, for sports writers, and for racing fans. Their voices are supported by sound evidence, and they deserve to be heard. Go, girl. Gosh, she's amazing. I love her.
I see another book in the works.
Another movie coming back.
Yes.
The Preakness. Revisited.
Hey, how about you have a story in here I see about my painter, the painter guy from Miami, Mark Bolesky.
I know. He wasn't a painter, was he? Didn't he work for the golf course or something?
Oh, that's right. No, he was a maintenance guy at the hotel. That's right.
Yes.
Maintenance guy at the hotel. That's right. That's what it
so,
was.
So Mark Bolesky, for those who don't know, he was a potential Derby horse. And for those who really don't know and didn't listen, they can go back and check the shows before the Derby, because he initially was your Derby pick before you chose I'll Have Another, was he not?
Yes, he was, only because of the story.
Yes, because he was named after some guy that they knew that worked at some place. And anyway, it was a weird story. Glenn just jumped all on it. I like Mark Bolesky. Mark Bolesky, this guy. And so Mark Bolesky, the actual human, was going to go to the Derby and be able to watch the namesake run in the Kentucky Derby. Well, it turned out he didn't qualify. So Mark Bolesky was taken out of the Kentucky Derby. He really hasn't done all that well since he did not get to run in the Derby. He did win the Peter Pan Stakes before the Derby. He came in second to the Risen Star Stakes, but then he did not qualify for the Derby. However, sadly, he has been sidelined for the remainder of the year. He is having to undergo surgery for a small chip in his left carpal joint in the knee. And so, unfortunately, Mark Bolesky will be sidelined for the rest of the year. Apparently, he did not appear himself while galloping, and they detected it, and he's out. He's out for the year. Sorry, buddy.
Boy, all my picks are going down here.
My picks lose, your picks get hurt.
Yeah, it was because Mark Bolesky that didn't run that I ended up picking I'll Have Another. And that was just because of the name. At least Mark Bolesky, yeah. There was a good story. I'll Have Another is because I thought they were ordering more beer. And I didn't
and
even know.
It turns out
they
just wanted cookies.
Cookies, yeah, which I'll take too. I'll take cookies. I'll probably take cookies over beer, actually. All right. Why don't you introduce your guest that you were able to do an interview with?
Yeah, well, spending time at Epona Equestrian Center in Spain, I got to sit down with the dressage trainer there, and she and her family run the whole place, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the episode. But her name is Vivi Garcia, former student and of Rafael Soto, actually, and she actually spent 4 years at the Royal Andalusian School in Jerez, Spain. So check this out. Enjoy. Here is Vivi Garcia.
And notice, by the way, when I was editing this, I got to tell you, I absolutely loved the fact you must have been outside in Spain. I can picture it as a warm, sunny day. You're sitting there with, like, all of this tropical fauna around, and you could hear the birds singing in the background the whole time. So it was cool.
Live from Spain, baby.
And I'm sitting here in Carmona, Spain, under the gazebo. The sun is out. The breeze is blowing. I just dismounted the most amazing, beautiful black stallion that I've ever seen or ridden in my entire life. Well, the only beautiful black stallion I've ever ridden in my entire life, but it's not the point. It's been an absolutely amazing time, and I'm sitting here with Vivi Garcia, Viviana Garcia, who is the, I guess, what would be considered the head trainer here?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Head trainer, and spent 4 years at Epona, the Royal Andalusian School of Equestrian Art training under
Rafael Soto,
who we also have interviewed with, and it's going to either come on before or after this. So tell us what it is like. What is a day in the life of a Grand Prix master horse trainer?
it depends a little bit on the day. It's never the same every day. It depends a little bit what other stuff I have on the schedule, but if I'm lucky that I have nothing but riding, it's I arrive, I have breakfast. I don't live here at the farm, so I drive out. I come, I go to the stable, I check everybody, all the horses out. Then I go and have my breakfast. And over breakfast, I kind of decide. I make a plan of who's going first and everything. And then I just start a long list of horses that I have to ride, and then the day goes on.
And how many horses do you have here that you have in training?
Because
there's like 60 horses here. You cannot possibly ride all of those every day.
No, sadly not. I do have to say, out of the 60, we do have quite a few retired horses that have been great, amazing horses for us, and we hate to get rid of them when they're old, so they get to have a nice retirement. But yes, there's maybe around 45, 50 working horses that are in work, some of which are trail riding horses. Obviously, those I don't have to ride personally. We do like to school them now and then in the arena. It kind of keeps them nice, better on the rides, but I don't have to do that myself. There's, I would say, maybe about 20 dressage horses, really, that are highly trained, of which maybe 10 or 12 are horses that are used in lessons by clients who are already to a high level. And those horses are usually ridden by other people, not by me, though I do
school them
on an occasional basis, not every day. And then there'd be another 10, 12 horses that are under a more
regular.
Yeah. Some of them younger horses that obviously I'm the only one that rides, really. And then there's others that are sort of halfway, so people get to ride them, but I'm still moving them on.
Now, when we talk about training these horses, these are not... For those that are thinking, oh, they're like unbroke or they're young or whatever, you start them either from unbroke or having some training, and you don't just like get them walk, trot, canter and move them on or teach lessons on them. These horses do all the way up to tempi changes and piaf and passage and Spanish walk. And every horse that I've sat on at this place has been absolutely amazing. Even my little Seneca that I rode for the first week, I had no idea I was sitting on a horse that was Grand Prix trained until the last day. They're like, oh, yeah, go do some tempi changes. What? That doesn't happen at a normal farm with normal horses. It's such a unique place, and there are so many horses that you have brought along to this unbelievable upper level, upper echelon of training. How many have you completed, you know?
I should have made you think about this ahead of time. Quite a few. I mean, I have obviously the ones that we have here that are horses that the purpose in life is to carry on and let other people feel the experience of riding advanced horses. But some of the ones that I've trained have been sold on, mm-hmm. or I've trained them for other people. So there's quite a few, certainly.
How hard is it to spend that much time with an animal and get them so far, and then, I mean, you know, unfortunately, it's the business where you don't get to keep every one of them. And we've talked to many riders that, you know, event riders who are like, oh, my God, I had to sell my advance horse because of money or because of this and that. How hard is it to let those go that you just, I mean, we've talked about this horse named Legendario.
Legendario.
Yes, whatever. We talked about that horse and how when he is going to have to be sold, it's going to break your heart. Is it that way with most of them? Some you want to see go, get out of here.
No, never. It's never been like that with any of them. But obviously you do get a bond, a special bond with some of them. All of them, there's the tear, you know, that comes down when you finally load them,
mm-hmm.
and they're off, and you see them at the window of the lorry, and that's it. But with some of them, it really is a big deal. It depends a lot on the personality of the horse and just the way that you click with them. And I don't know, some of them, especially the ones that are not mine, they never have been mine. Someone has bought the horse and said, Vivi, will you train this horse on for me? I know from the beginning that horse is not mine, he's never going to be mine, and he's going to go. So it's different because you're mentally prepared. It's a little tougher when maybe it's been a horse that you have thought is going to be yours for good, and then the circumstances make you have to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's tougher.
So most of this training that you have learned, would you credit that to the Royal School, or have you been studying this forever?
I can't credit it all to the Royal School. I have had, luckily, very luckily, parents who have had me involved with horses since before I could walk, and always really gone out of their way to get trainers and to get me abroad training in the UK. And so I have had some very good instructors over the years, mm-hmm. including my mom and dad. They were my first trainers.
That's got to be tough. Sometimes you just want to tell them to shut up, but as your parents.
Not my mom. You know my mom.
True.
You don't tell her to shut up. No, she's very strict, and we had a riding school, so we were just treated as other riding school kids.
Really?
Yes.
No special treatment.
No special treatment.
We're talking about your parents, and they own Epona Equestrian Center that
yes.
we are at right now.
That would be
okay. So they own the school, and your mom joins us, you know, every day for lunch and dinner, and your dad is the escort and takes us on the trail rides every day, and your parents are... They have worked very hard to put all this together. I mean, this place is over 600 years old, this equestrian center, and it's absolutely fantastic. But, yeah, I can see how you don't backtalk your mama, do you?
No, certainly not when I was much younger. No.
Right.
There was no – because before we did the holidays, initially we had riding school.
Yeah.
With local, especially kids.
Yeah.
So Katie and I were just – another two of the kids that did lessons, and we had no special treatment. We didn't get the best ponies. Actually, usually we got the
yeah,
the tough ones, and I've always had ponies, luckily, but I had to share them with the other kids that rode here. I never had, like, special my own pony that nobody else can ride. So that, you know, that, I think, was very, very important. And then she did try, and they both tried and had to have us riding in the UK in the summers, and so that we did also have other instructors, yeah, and everything. And then as I got older, it got more and more serious.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely there was a before and after the Royal School. I think that was like the real change from sort of liking dressage. You know, I also jumped, so I would do a little bit of everything, and I liked everything. And I rode dressage to a certain level, but after the school, I had more tools to be able to train horses to Grand Prix level, and I was very inspired, and it really made me become dressage addicted.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I think is a necessity, really. If you want to do this, you have to be, like, 24 hours a day thinking about your dressage, your horses, everything.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the problem is I'm going to leave here and torment my poor thoroughbred when I get home. You will do Spanish Walk. I can make you do it. No, I mean, you totally immerse yourself in it, and you do get addicted,
mm-hmm,
especially when it's more than a 20-meter circle, when your horse has these buttons that... And that's what's great about coming to this school and coming to this equestrian center, is that you will be riding a horse that has these buttons that you never thought you'd be able to push on a horse ever. And here you guys are telling us how to... Never in my life have I done a lead change at X on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am. I've done it on 3 different horses. So you guys out there, if you are looking for a holiday or you want to further your riding, this is the place to go. I mean, without a doubt, and to get instruction from you and your sister. My husband, by the way, his position has improved. He's walk, trot, cantering around the arena doing 20-meter circles. This is my husband, okay? So it's been fantastic instruction, and I feel like just in 1 week how much I've seen him grow and the other girls that we get to ride with here and study with and myself. I mean, I never thought I'd be able to accomplish, especially in 1 week, what I've been able to accomplish. But there's something that you have to tell me. And this is something that's very important, and we're going to put this on Horse Tip Daily so all of you can go to it and listen to just this one little part. But Vivi has promised me that she will teach me how to teach my horse how to do a flying lead change.
Okay.
and it's like, it's just privileged information you guys are getting.
No, and I mean, it's common sense.
Oh Lord.
It's not anything.
What are you saying?
I mean, there isn't like a secret, you know, that trainers have, I mean, that they're not going to tell you. I mean, it's out there.
Maybe I just haven't trained with any dressage riders that know how to.
Yeah, I mean,
to another person.
Really, the flying changes. It's not so much the change itself. Is not so difficult. It's the getting there. Sometimes it's a little bit more difficult, because before you attempt the change, there are a few things that your horse has to do very well. And that's really sometimes the sort of difficult part. You do want to have a good quality canter. That's the beginning of a flying change.
Okay.
So you want a forward, jumpy canter. It's difficult if your horse has a little bit of flat canter. So if he does, you have to try and develop a little bit of a more jumpy, bouncy, but
uphill canter.
Yeah, canter. And obviously you have to develop a lot of straightness in the canter. You know, sometimes a lot of people, if you're always cantering right or left in the arena, going around in circles and just around the outside track, you don't realize the that your horse is always bending, either right or left. And for the changes, the horse has to be able to canter absolutely on a straight line with no bend. So before you even attempt the change. A straight, absolutely straight shoulders and hind end on the same lines, very important before the change. You want to be able to ride, practice a lot of diagonals without changing. Obviously, the horse doesn't know how to change, but getting the horse really on a perfect diagonal, like I said before, maybe even practicing turning onto the diagonal without any bend, so that the heel will be absolutely straight by the time you're hitting the X. You're not having to adjust bending and straightness on the diagonal, because that can make it really difficult to when you're attempting the change. But also riding three-quarter lines at the canter, without changing, just lots of just straightness. That's when you're really going to realize, is my heart isn't straight. If you are riding across three-quarter lines and diagonals, and if you're having trouble with that, you know, that's when you're really going to feel, oh, my heart isn't straight. And basically feeling that the contact is on the outside rein. You know, everyone talks outside rein contact, but really putting yourself in the situation that you're really testing this outside contact and this straightness. So that's one priority, the straight. Also, I like to practice, and you've seen this when I've been training the horses, and you've been doing it also on our horses, is to be able to bend them both ways. So even if you're on the left rein, to bend your horse right.
So like counter bending in the canter.
Counter bending in the trot and the canter, but also in the canter. And that's sometimes people forget to do it. So even on a circle, you have to be able to have your horse accepting an outside bend without getting out of rhythm, without getting out of balance, and without trying to change, you know, when we're not asking. So basically that's going to create a type of balance that's going to help you also. So with your own horse, practice a lot of this.
Okay.
Bending, and then not bending when you don't want to be bending. And then all of this is going to improve your canter anyway. And then obviously a lot of direct transitions. That's like, that's basic before you ask for changes. Canter to walk and walk to canter. Canter to walk to canter. And just doing them anywhere, like on serpentines, free loop serpentines, so across the center line. But it could be anywhere on the three-quarter line, and that's going to really test your straightness. But also on the track, so cantering left, stopping your horse, and cantering, asking for a counter. And when that is very, very good and the horse is very responsive, then you're really on the way to ask for the change.
Okay.
Usually once your horse has developed this balance and the straightness, and he's also very alert and responsive to your leg aids for the counter strike out, the change should kind of happen.
Okay.
When you ask, even with a horse that doesn't know it. There's a little trick, and this is a trick, that I had never tried before I went to the Royal School, and it's applicable mostly to horses that have maybe not a very jumpy canter. So sometimes the warm bloods, they're more than willing to give changes, and they actually almost do it on their own. You don't require such a big preparation because they have such a bounce and such a big stride. They have such a big moment of suspension that for them, really just shifting the weight a little, shifting the leg is just going to encourage a change. If you have a horse that doesn't have that naturally, you can create it a little bit. So what we do is, apart from, you know, developing the canter like we spoke about earlier, we teach our horses to react a little bit with the whip. So touching gently, behind, on the hind end with the whip, we kind of teach them to bounce a little bit, like take a bit of a jump mm-hmm. on the counter stride, on the command of the whip. So not all the time, but we kind
of... Is this when you're on or on the ground?
This is when we're on.
On
when
the outside?
It doesn't matter. It could be any side. Basically, when I ride my horses, I touch with the whip and I develop
sensitivity.
That when I touch with the whip behind, they kind of really collect a little bit and kind of get a little jumpy in the canter.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like ready for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a horse, and this might work with your horse at home, you just get like a little jump with the whip and then try the change.
Okay.
And that really helps. It really is a good trick.
All right.
It's not just what you find in the books and whatever they tell you. This like really is a trick.
Well, it just...
And it works.
It just gets them thinking something.
Get them together.
And the final important step in the lead change.
The final
is what you yell at me every single time I finally get one because I get so excited and you forget. Two.
Well, especially when you're training young horses. And this I have learned over the many years with them is a really good praise on time is your best friend. When you're training horses, it's your best tool. They do have much more of a memory than we realize, and things do stick in their brain. So, for example, on your first change or on your first changes, again, especially with young ones, when you get a good one, stop your horse. Give them a huge pat, and if possible, put them away. Put them away in the stable. That is your best training tool. When they do something right, huge praising and put them away, because sometimes if they do it well, you want to get carried away. Oh, I'm going to try it again. And then they don't know. For them, they didn't know they did it well if you go off to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So that I've actually discovered this myself.
Yeah.
If you stop immediately when they did something well, especially at first when they're just learning it, it's like 50% of what you did is just there. It's just praising. It's a little bit like dogs, you know. People that have dogs, that own dogs, you know. If they do something well, you give them a treat right away.
Yeah. Yep.
It kind of sticks. And horses are more clever, I think, sometimes than what we think.
No. All right. So basically, don't keep doing it because you want to do it. And like what happened to me when I got my first change is. The praise for the horse should have been quicker than me going, oh, my God, look what I did. Woo-hoo, I did it, which is my reaction. But don't do that. Just pet your horse and tell him good boy and put him away. Well, I can't thank you enough for being on our show and being a part of it and helping me all week long and helping my husband and inviting us into your amazing
Well, thank
facility.
You so much for coming.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. And, of course, more pictures and photos and videos and all the stuff that you can imagine, and we'll go ahead and post the link on the Facebook page right now. Thank you very much, Vivi.
Thank you.
And that was Vivi Garcia from Epona Equestrian Center in Spain. And did you guys learn something? Did you learn? Because I'm going to go out and just practice my counter bend at the canter and my transitions repeatedly because I'm going to get a lead change.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to do that right after the
show. Poor Beaker. It's inspirational to hear that, though. It's like somebody finally telling you how to do it, because so many times their dressage lessons are like, okay, do 20-meter circles, and they're not as exciting as trying to get something accomplished like that. So it was great to sit down and talk to her about that and kind of get a little bit of the secrets of the flying change. So, again, Vivi Garcia from Epona Equestrian Center. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can just go to EponaSpain.com is their website.
I do have one quick question about at the beginning of that recording about her mother. I can just picture this woman with her wooden spoon chasing her around the kitchen. you know, after the comment she made about her mother. So what was her mother like?
Her mom was awesome, but again, the kind of woman you would not mess with. So the family, you know, like I said, the mom did all the cooking and then feeds all the guests. And oh my gosh, amazing chef. But if you can hear in Phoebe's accent, it's interesting because it's English and a little bit of Spanish and a little bit of Scottish, because her mom is a Scottish woman and is just hysterical. But yeah, I could see, you know, if she's giving you a riding lesson, you don't argue with her, much like Jen. Like, if I was, you know, 10 years old and Jennifer Heber was giving me riding lessons, I'd be a little scared.
Poor Jennifer. She's actually great giving riding lessons. Very gentle. She's actually good. Except when she's giving me lessons, that didn't go so well. Well, I'm going
to
take a break.
I've heard her talk to you.
Thank you for putting that together while you're over there. Appreciate that. That'll also be available if you want to listen to it again on this recorded version, and also Jennifer will be putting it over on Horse Tip Daily. Well, we're going to do a song, and then we're coming back with thehorse.com, talk a little bit about veterinary stuff at the Olympics. But first, we have, what do we have today? Oh, Ride Away by Chancey Neal. This is old Roy Orbison's song. Well, that was Chancey Neal, 18 years old barrel racer, doing a Roy Orbison song called Ride Away. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is over producing today. And we wanted to, we did a great show. It's going to be out later today. It's sort of my Horse Radio Network show highlight. Is the dressage or the driving radio show I did with Wendy last night, and as I said, it'll be out later today. But we had the chance, Jamie, to interview a girl by the name of V from Australia who actually runs something I've never heard of before, and she has this big huge coach, this huge horse drawn coach that's very fancy inside. It kind of looks like a dining rail car inside, and it's set up that you can actually do. They have a, it's called the slow coach, and they serve you dinner on the coach while they drive around town. So
wow.
It's a dinner coach pulled by three Clydesdale horses in the beautiful part of Victoria in Australia. And it was just, it's just the coolest thing. It's very fancy, and they'll serve, it's up to 3 hours long. They'll drive you around and serve these five course dinners on this coach. There's four tables in it. So there's four couples that can be in it at a time, and it's just something I never heard of, and it's absolutely beautiful. So we got to talk to her and learn a little bit about a dining coach, which I'd never heard of before.
Dude, how big are those coaches? How big is that carriage or whatever?
It's pretty big. It kind of reminded me of almost like a railroad car. It's pulled by three Clydesdales across. They're all lined up, and they pull it around town, and they have various stops they do along the way between courses and things. So it's really cool. I've never heard of anything like that before. Well, let's get to our segment that we do once a week on horse health. And this is provided by thehorse.com.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, howdy, Michelle from thehorse.com. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Good morning. Welcome back, Jamie.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for filling in for me while I was gone. It was tough.
Oh, I had so much fun. You had it pretty rough.
Yeah, I really did, and I was very sad. But thank you again for stepping up and helping me out.
Oh, for sure.
Michelle, she said on the show this morning, or before the show started in our pre-show meeting, she said, how good did Michelle do? It wasn't too good, was it? I said she did great. She had a blast.
Oh, thanks. I really did have a good time, although doing lead changes on Andalusians in Spain would have been pretty nice too. So.
Yeah. What are we talking about today, Michelle?
So we have Dr. Kent Allen with us. He is an official vet for the Olympics coming up in London. He has a practice in Virginia. He specializes in equine imaging, so he has Virginia Equine Imaging in Middleburg. Really smart guy, knows lots about lamenesses and has lots of FEI experience. So is Dr. Allen with us?
I think so. Dr. Allen, are you there?
I'm sorry. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yay.
There you go.
Hi, Dr. Allen.
How are you all doing?
We're good. Good. So, Dr. Allen, you are an official Olympic vet. So what is the difference between that and being a team vet? Because I was a little confused between those two things.
Well, a team veterinarian, which I've done that job for the U.S. team in both dressage and eventing, and they're responsible for helping with the selection and then taking a small group of horses, anywhere from 1 to 6 horses over, and kind of helping them as competition horses get through the competition. When you're on the FEI Veterinary Commission, you do a somewhat different job. Your job is to the care, welfare, medication control, what goes in these competition horses, and the horses all jog in front of you to make sure that they're fit to compete at an Olympic Games.
Okay. And so your official title is FEI Foreign Veterinary Delegate. So how do you end up with a title like that? I would think that this is kind of a dream job for
a vet.
Good title.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's It has its moments. the foreign veterinary delegate, anytime they do a world championships or world equestrian games or an Olympics or even a major championship, the FEI selects a foreign, that is a nationality that is not in the country where the championships are held. And then the veterinary delegate is the FEI representative. A veterinary commission consists of a president of the veterinary commission, the foreign veterinary delegate, which is the ranking veterinary judge, and then two associate veterinarians. And so we form a commission and we operate as a team overseeing everything that goes on with these 250 horses, which will be on the grounds in London at Greenwich Park.
And so sometimes I'm assuming you have to make tough calls and say that horses can't compete. Also, that's probably the more of the downside of the job, I would guess.
Yeah, it is. A lot of times it's, you know, communicating with the competitors and the team veterinarians, and they're asking permission to give medication, and you're looking at the horse and saying that's a great idea. But occasionally, particularly in the horse inspections, you know, the question is, are the horses fit to compete or are they safe to compete? And that can be a pretty quick judgment you have to make, and it always has consequences, and you have to try to be as objective and neutral about it as possible. I've already done this job at the Sydney Olympics, the exact same job, and it's, you know, moments are stressful, but it's very rewarding as well, so I've enjoyed it.
So, Sydney, so that's been quite a while. How did you become an FEI vet?
You qualify nowadays. You take a test to even get in an FEI compound and treat a horse. Back in those days, you largely had a mentor veterinarian, and mine was Dr. Marty Simonson. And he had been the team vet for years. I started doing the team vet job for the eventing team, and then he got me my FEI veterinary status. Then I was the veterinary coordinator for the Olympics in Atlanta. And then I guess they decided they wanted to see more of me after that, so I got the Sydney job, and then I've been involved. I'm the head FEI veterinarian for the United States, and I'm involved on the veterinary committee and the drug and medication committee for USEF. So, you know, you want to be involved in the community and the horse industry, or you don't really know enough to do this job.
So leading up to the games, what are your responsibilities as you get ready to head to London?
Well, they like the veterinary commissions to work together. So I was the foreign veterinary delegate for the World Cup over in the Netherlands here a month or two ago. And we all four worked together there. And then I'll go over to Aachen here in about 2-3 weeks. And we'll work together again as a commission there. And then the 22nd of July, head over to England, and the first horse arrives on the grounds at Greenwich Park the 23rd of July, and then we finish up August 10th.
So lots of travel. Do you have any favorite events that you've worked?
Well, I've been the various roles, but for the last 10 or 15 years, the treating vet at Rolex 3-day event in Kentucky. And so that's a personal favorite of mine and has been for a lot of years, and it's an amazing event to be at. But again, there I'm a treating vet, so I have no official role. No horses jog up in front of me as to whether or not they can stay in the competition. That's another veterinarian does that job. So, you know, like I say, if you're very involved in the sport and sports medicine and horses, it's common that you play different roles: treating veterinarian, veterinary services manager for a World Equestrian Games, veterinary coordinator for an Olympics, foreign veterinary delegate for an Olympics. You play a lot of different roles, team veterinarian, yet, you know, every day, actually, all I do is come in and look at horses who need lameness diagnosis. And so that's actually my day job. The rest of it's pretty much volunteer.
So once you head over to London, how long are you going to be there? And once you're there, what does your typical day look like?
Yeah, so we'll be there about 2.5 weeks. And a typical day, you know, the like typical horse stables, it gets going fairly early with horses wanting to get out and exercise. If you've got competition scheduled that day, then there are various veterinarians. There's the same person who did the job that I did at the World Equestrian Games here a couple of years ago, and they're in charge of coordinating the veterinary services. So the veterinary commission acts fairly autonomously because we're overall in charge of the rules and regulations and the competition, but there's a veterinary coordinator or services manager, and she's going to be in charge of making sure that the veterinarians are out on the course, if there's competition, that the horse ambulances are in place, that communications are happening, the clinic is staffed. If team veterinarians need to have horses examined, there's clinicians available for that. Various team veterinarians are coming in and asking for permission to medicate a horse, and different levels of our involvement. Sometimes it's just we sign off on a form. Other times we go and inspect the horse and inquire why they're wanting to do that. And then sometimes we allow it, sometimes we don't. So the days tend to run long. Stables close at about 10, 11 o'clock. And, you know, there's veterinary coverage the whole time, and the veterinary commission has to have a member available the whole time, and then at night as well if there's a problem. So it gets busy, and every once in a while you get out and you get to see another competition or something like that. So that makes it fun too, or the opening ceremonies.
So if you can sneak off and watch another sport, which one do you make it to?
Well, I actually ran track in undergraduate, and so I like to go see the track and field if I can, and it's amazing stuff as well. I mean, the horses are incredible athletes, but there are some pretty amazing human athletes too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so awesome to get them all together like that. But I'm sorry, were you going to say
something? No, go ahead.
So you're talking about all the horses, so you're looking at all the different disciplines while you're there?
Right. There's one foreign veterinary delegate and one veterinary commission for an Olympics, and we do all three of the Olympic disciplines, dressage, jumping, and eventing. When you get to a World Equestrian Games and you have 8 disciplines, then usually you break it down into 2 veterinary commissions and split it up a bit.
And then you mentioned your practice, your day job, of looking at horses. Can you tell us a little bit about your practice in Virginia?
Yeah, I started what at the time when I moved from Arizona, I ran a practice called Arizona Equine and built that back in the early 80s, and then sold that in the mid 90s, and then moved out here to Virginia. This was supposed to be my retirement practice. It's been a little busier than that, but and so what we do is we kind of started a little niche that I like, which is we just do lameness and specialty diagnostic imaging. And so it's a little kind of subspecialty of sports medicine. We do no surgery. We don't do any routine work. Don't do any emergencies. And we just focus on the equine athlete and its musculoskeletal system in particular, and then whatever imaging, nuclear medicine, ultrasound, digital radiology, MRI that we need to tell people about, you know, what the horse's problem is and what it's going to mean to them.
So the work that you do in your clinic here at home, how does that prepare you for the work that you do over at the Olympics in London?
Well, it's pretty similar. If you stand there on a surface and watch horses jog for lameness in front of you, and you stand on Olympics and watch to see if they're fit to compete. It's pretty close to the same thing. Not exact, but about as close as you're going to get. So essentially, I when I go off to the Olympics, I take my day job with me, and I just do it slightly differently.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the track and field. Is there anything else that you're really looking forward to being in London, something that you really want to see or do?
Well, and the diving and the swimming is pretty amazing. When I was in Sydney, you know, an Olympics is all about credentials, what's on your credential, and that allows where you can go. And if you're the head technical delegate, you get this little thing that looks like an infinity sign. And that what that means is that you can walk into any Olympic venue at any point in time. No tickets are required.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there were any big perks while
yeah,
you're there.
Yeah, that's the big perk. And you actually feel a little embarrassed, you know, walking down to the front row of track and field after everybody else worked for 2 years to get their tickets. But, you know, I got over that eventually. I figured I worked hard for it.
Yeah, I would
Are
think
you
so.
Like... Do you, like, hold your pass up like Wayne and Garth, you know, like, oh, excuse me, coming through, got this pass,
Deal. Actually, there is so much security involved around an Olympics Games. The disaster, you can tell your day's gone badly when you've left the hotel room and you forgot your pass because you can't get in anywhere.
Oh, no. Go back and get
That's
that.
Great.
So, well, thank you, Dr. Allen. I know you're really very busy right now getting ready to go and do all these events, but we appreciate you taking the time to chat with us this morning.
No
now,
problem. Enjoy talking.
Yep,
go ahead.
Michelle, I would love to have Dr. Allen on again at some point in the future because I am fascinated about your practice. I mean, sports medicine in general for horses is just an amazing avenue of veterinary medicine. But to be able to talk to you about the, I'd love to find out how the MRI has really helped you guys and changed everything. I have so many friends that in the past year had horses that were lame and nobody could figure it out. They've been here and there, and all of a sudden they get an MRI and it's pinpointed and they've got it figured out. And I'd love to talk to you about your practice and all the different sports medicine options that you guys do have. Would you come back on sometime?
Sure. No problem at all.
Probably
all
after
right,
October?
Yeah, well, catch me in September. How's that?
Okay, sounds good.
I'll call you
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, call me the Olympics. Great.
Yes.
All right, thanks, Dr. Allen.
Okay, y'all take care.
Thanks.
You too. And I love a guy that says y'all. Come on now. I haven't heard that in a while. I love it. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for being on with us, too.
Oh,
what
thank
a
you.
Big get. He's an awesome, awesome, very, very famous, well-known veterinarian, and good job getting him on. It's an honor to talk to him and have him on the show. So thank you very much.
When,
great job.
When he said yes, I was excited. I was like, yay, I got him. So nice. Very, like you said, yes. Very, very well respected, especially in lameness diagnostics. Really fun to get to work with him.
Without a doubt. Well, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you again next week. And again, thanks for filling in for me. I heard you were trying to take my job, but
Well, if you ever need to take a break, we could do a job switch sometime. You can do mine for a week. I'll do yours.
Yeah, you might get fired because I can't write for nothing.
Thanks, Michelle.
Bye, everyone.
Boy, My Little Pony. Who would know that they were that popular? According to our Facebook page, look at all the comments we've had.
I hate to say, I told you so. When you said, "I don't know My Little Pony," I'm like, "My Little Pony, My Little Pony." Yeah, they're amazing. They were my childhood. I had one that had like a rainbow on his side, and it was like the rainbow My Little Pony. And they all had different names, and they all had different personalities and like special powers.
Well, your mom jumped in, though, and made sure that you understood who bought the little My Little Ponies for you.
Oh, I know. No confusion there, as my mother's like, does it count if you bought them? Yes, Mom.
I can't
yes, it does.
People. We have a here who said I have hundreds of them. Karen, who says, I think I've had them all. Leslie Wiley, who the Horse Nation, has never heard of My Little Ponies. What kind of sad, depraved childhood did you lead? Aubrey have another sister, and it's Leslie. The three of you sisters. Leslie's, throw her in the mix. It just goes on and on. People, you know, and there were a couple people that said they had not heard of them. And there were people that are old like us, like Jennifer and I. Those are the people that hadn't heard of them.
I don't know. I was really impressed with the amount of people that said, oh, yeah, I had them and I still do. So that's awesome.
I know. Still have the whole collection. Well, I thought today, I think that's about it for us today. We'll be back again tomorrow. But I thought we had to do this again. It has, since we have been on the air, the Colbert thing has just gone crazy on Facebook. I have seen that post about 100 times. I have gotten 4 or 5 emails from people in the time we've been on the air saying, did you see this? Did you see this? It's just gone nuts. So I thought what we'd do is just play this. We're going to play the song. How about we play the song out? I have that all queued up. So we'll play the song out. This is the end of it where he does this song. And you must relate to that song being a baseball fan. You must love this.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I can't wait to watch it today.
All right, everybody. Have a great day. Enjoy yourself. Wear your helmets. And
spay, neuter, and geld.
Hello? Jenny?
Yeah. Spay, neuter, and geld. I said it.
All right, here we go. Can I hear it? Here we are.
Take me out to the horse ring. Take me out to dressage. Buy me some jodhpurs and a velvet hat. I don't care if the orchestra's flat. Let me softly clap for the home horse. If he don't win, he'll be glue. For it's 1-2, but Holtz, you're out at the United States Equestrian Federation National Class Champions of Southern New Jersey. Play sports! I am exhausted.